I run my races around with them.
Well, I guess we're going to get started, so. We'll call to order the meeting of the Tribal State Relations Committee for September 26, 2016, and will the clerk please take the roll?
Representatives Nelson?
Here.
Ammerman?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Trotier?
Here.
Senators Larson?
Present.
Heckman?
Here.
Elke?
Here.
Task Force members, Scott Davis?
Here.
Archambault? Fox? McLeod? Pearson? Renzo? Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. And our first item of business is consideration of the minutes of the August 2nd, 2016 minute meeting. Did anyone have any corrections or additions or a move to approve?
Move to approve.
We have a motion to approve. Is there a second? Second by Representative Johnson. Okay, any discussion? If not, we'll proceed to vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carried. Okay. Then we move on to our presentation by our staff of a bill draft relating to a pilot project to provide state services to tribal youth adjudicated in tribal court. And this is kind of our finished up business here, and the big thing that we have to really decide at some point here, we found out that we didn't have to change the law in order to do this. But the question is whether we put forward a bill draft to try and really push that this should be done, or if we're better off not going forward with that. That's really our decision. So if the clerk would please present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You should have a bill draft in front of you. It's 17.02940-1000. This would create a new section to chapter 2721, which is the Division of Juvenile Services chapter, and it would provide for the establishment of a pilot program for providing state services to youth or juveniles who are adjudicated in tribal court. It would provide for reports to the legislative management and would have an expiration date. The pilot program would provide that the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, through its juvenile services division, would offer to negotiate and enter a memorandum of understanding with the tribal government of one federally recognized Indian tribe in the state for the purposes of providing for the care, custody, and treatment of juveniles, tribal juveniles who are adjudicated in tribal court in accordance with tribal or federal laws. Under the program and the memorandum of understanding, there would be certain criteria that would apply. First would be that the tribal government would provide the department with all the records that are available, tribal court records, mental and psychiatric reports, law enforcement reports, and other pertinent information. The department would provide services based on the individual needs of each juvenile referred and accepted by the department. They would maintain regular contact with the tribe on each juvenile who's been placed in the custody, and provide quarterly progress reports and more frequent reports if the behavior warrants. Would authorize the department to limit the number that are accepted based on criteria the department develops and based upon the availability of state resources and services. It would allow the department to decline acceptance of or return a juvenile if the juvenile is a threat to institutional safety or security, or if the juvenile fails to adhere to departmental policies or programming. Every other July 1st, there would be a report required to be made to the legislative management regarding the status, effectiveness, performance, and sustainability of the pilot program. And there's a four-year sunset clause on this. This would run through July 31st, 2021. We extended it to a four-year because it may take a while to get this up and running, so a two-year may not have been enough time to really get an idea of this, if this would be an effective program. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Vinette? Yes, Senator Elke.
Vinette, on line 12, where it says one federally recognized Indian tribe, should it be a federally recognized Indian tribe? Would that make a difference at all, or is that just, yeah. Am I just thinking?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, I went back and forth on that. I think the idea was that it would be a pilot project with one tribe. However, if one tribe opted not to negotiate, if you could go on to another one, but I think the intent was that it would happen, there'd be an MOU with just one tribe as part of the pilot program. But I know exactly what you're getting at, because I went through the same discussion with myself.
Welcome.
Well, the discussion you had with yourself is probably superior to the one I'm having with you right now, so.
Okay. Any further questions for Vinette? Yes, Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, what is the Indian tribe in question that's going to apply for this pilot project? Is it going to be the Turtle Mountains, or do we know who is wanting to take this on? And then the other part of the question is, this bill will then put it in the hands of the tribal courts to say, we want to use these services, or is it the state going to be saying, we want that individual to use this service?
You want to take that? Or?
Go ahead.
Well, it's not designating a particular tribe. You know, I mean, we do much of this process. We talked about Spirit Lake, but I'm not sure that they would participate. I mean, it's really not specific to designate a certain tribe, So the question would be, and you might go through negotiations and find out that things just aren't going to work with a particular tribe either. So there's that. As far as how it would work, the idea is that it is basically cooperative. The tribe would be able to access state services, but not that they'd really be required to. And at the same time, the state would provide services, but you never know where you are for space and such, but so they would not be required in those circumstances either. The idea is to go ahead and cooperate. And of course, the big question is whether, how we move this forward most efficiently, whether a pilot program like this for 4 years is the way to do it, or whether we just leave it sit, and potentially we could do this with all the tribes, but if we have this pilot program, it's going to look, pretty much like we're going to do it with one for that time. Anyway, so, Scott.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, Senator Larson, I think, much like much of the work that we do in my office is, finding the tribe that is open to our offer, if you want to, in such words. I think to add to the chairman's comments about Spirit Lake, I know they've had a lot of interest, considering Judge Foudy has really pushed this the last, at least a year and a half on this. I know even Standing Rock now with Aaron Shanley, Judge Shanley down there, I think she would be open to some type of an agreement or a pilot project with Standing Rock as well too. So those are probably the first two tribes I would approach, if this pilot study moves forward through this committee. So.
Yes, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you explain a little bit more when you kind of your opening statement, you really don't need this, but to push it, we can push it. Is this something we can do already? Is that
General framework for agreements is there, and there's really nothing in law stopping the executive branch from writing up such an agreement. And we did basically have an agreement in place with Turtle Mountain, but that agreement had Turtle Mountain paying for the services, and when they didn't have the cash to continue, that basically lapsed. So effectively we have had this sort of thing. Just the this would be, you know, and there's nothing saying that another agreement couldn't have a tribe pay for the services as well. I mean, it's really, it's all negotiable under current law. And the thing is that we don't really see it happening right now. And so that's the complexity of this decision on this, of whether we're best off putting this bill forward. And then if the bill would fail, you know, that could be taken as kind of a don't do this type of statement, or if we're better off just staying with the law where it's at and waiting maybe for budget to ease a little bit or whatever, that we could do that. You know, so yeah. So anything else for question for staff? And then Scott, if you have any additional comments?
I got one.
Oh.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Elke.
And this go back to Vonette again, line 17 through 19. Who gets to decide whether the information is pertinent to the referral or not? I mean, I can see an instance where the, you know, the recipient saying, you know, we need this and this and this, where the tribe might say, nah, you really don't need all that. It's not pertinent. But I don't see anywhere in here where it describes what is pertinent, or if there is some other reference somewhere that says these things are pertinent to such a situation, or, you know, can you help me with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, I guess I really can't. I actually used the MOU that the department had with Turtle Mountain, and I pulled some of that language out of there. So this was included in the MOU that was in place. I don't know what other information might be valuable to the department if this is inclusive. I would guess those kind of things could also be worked out in the MOU if they, you know, need more specificity in what's pertinent.
Well, if I might continue, if something like this ends up in Century Code, then it kind of is the MOU, and then doesn't that create an issue when one entity might say, well, it only says it has to be pertinent, but the MOU mm-hmm. might be more elaborative, but that wouldn't be in Century Code, mm-hmm. so then this becomes the order of rule?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, I mean, it's possible, you know, we could change this to a may require, you know, if we made it a mandatory that, you know, these be included in the information. I just thought there should be some exchange of information so the state is aware of what they're getting, what issues this juvenile has, just to keep the department informed.
Sure. Thank you.
Anything further? Any comments by the committee? Any comments by interested people in the audience? Okay, well then I guess that's basically the business ahead of us. What do you think? Is this something we should go ahead with? I admit myself that I have mixed feelings. Under the current budget situation, I'm not sure that it would be well received. And like I say, if we kill the bill once it's received, I could see that being taken as kind of a suggestion not to do this. You know, it just, I get nervous about it. We are also kind of at least semi-freezing things in place with the idea that we have one as a pilot project. We're not doing others at that point, even though under the general framework of the law, I suppose it'd still be possible. But what are the committee's feelings? Any feelings? Yes, Representative Trotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the situation or conditions that we have today, can this still not be implemented without doing this, that the entities can get together and still work this out?
Absolutely. It's possible they could do everything. We don't need this bill. There's no reason that we have to put this bill forward, except we'd put it forward as a statement that we really feel that this type of thing should be moving forward, that we do it. It's a little bit of trying to legislate management, Yes, Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess when I'm trying to recall the testimony of the judge that was here, and the thing that just continues to come out to me is that we're all North Dakota citizens. And I've been on the reservation and doing some work up at Turtle Mountains and talking with the folks for 2 weeks that I was up there last. When they talk about their relatives going to Montana or going to Billings or going to somewhere, it's like it is such a burden for those folks to try to get their kids back, to try to see their kids, to try to get them some help. And this bill, I believe, will at least tell that we're all citizens. We're all going to make that attempt to help all of the people that are needed. I don't know if it's going to be killed on the floor or if they're going to say it's repetitive, but I think we owe the respect to the judge and to the people involved to at least put that forward to say that we're wanting to do something about this issue. Because it sounds to me like even if we can already do it, it's silent now. It's not happening now.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Heckman.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement by Senator Larson. I think right now, even though we have the opportunity to do it, unless we make the concerted effort to go forward with this, even though we're in a situation of budget constraints, to me, the financial situation right now would make it so much easier for everybody to say, no, we're not going to do a memorandum of understanding right now, unless we have some kind of direction from the legislature. So I think that this would be an opportunity for the legislature to bring something forward and say, we need to have this done, how important this is right now for the youth of North Dakota and the tribes in North Dakota to have this pilot project started. There is no fiscal note on it, I understand that, but I think it'd be so much easier for everybody to say, if we don't have this, well, we don't have the money right now. There is no money available. And then we're not going to have anything done, even though there's an opportunity to do it right now. So I think taking the bill forward, also bringing the bill forward will bring a lot of understanding to other legislators on what's going on right now. I think Judge Foudy would be probably coming forward, and we have Lisa here that, can bring a lot of information to both chambers right now. And I think that that's important to get the information out there. And I'm in favor of bringing the bill forward.
Was that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion from Senator Heckman to forward the bill to legislative management. Is there a second?
Second.
Senator Larson seconded. Okay. Further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, just another thing that just puzzles me is that if we have a Native youth that is living in Bismarck or living in Stanley and doing things that they shouldn't be doing, they get that whole umbrella of help. And when they're on the reservation, the same person, if he's in Stanley in the summertime and going to school on the reservation in the wintertime, does the same thing. He's locked out.
Yeah.
So we have the money in the summertime. If they all come to Bismarck in the summer, we've got the money for all those folks, but we don't in the wintertime. We have to have the money for these folks all the time, and it shouldn't be about the money on this issue. It shouldn't be.
Thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I apologize for being late. The thing that strikes me is that we're having a conversation about budget. We're citizens of the state. Going back to Senator Larson's point, we're already citizens of the state. Why? Because we have a different status as Native citizens as well. Why does that change things? There really should not be any concern about whether or not the budget is there or not. Youth, tribal youth, are also North Dakota youth.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Really, all I see is, from our government's point of view, is an attempt to try to formalize a process to make sure that information is being shared in the best interests of youth, and to try to reduce the burden on families to wrap around and see that process through on the rehabilitation and or treatment of youth. That's really all we're talking about. I think this is a great step forward in repairing the relationship between tribes and the state. And if nothing else, and we can accomplish just that alone, we have made progress. Because quite frankly, we don't have a really good relationship with the state. We want to, but it seems like it's always a one-sided conversation. And maybe this is the way that we can change that dynamic. And if this is the vehicle for us to begin to move in that direction, you know, great. That's a wonderful thing. Then everybody wins. I don't see it as really so much of a budget consideration as it is moving closer towards government to government understanding and focusing on need and figuring out a way where we can both be involved in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know now Spirit Lake declared a state of emergency with the drug problem, and I know certainly there's youth involved in that emergency as well, and if we could cooperate together in fighting that, that's been a problem a lot of times, is that imaginary line in the ground creates problems for us. Yes, Representative Johnson.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Judge Foddy has worked on this for quite a few years. We worked on this the last interim too. And unless I'm missing something, I think at our last meeting, Chairman Pearson sat right over here and said that she still has concerns about any type of sign of an MOU to move forward with something like this. So, yeah, this is a good program and stuff, but if we don't have all participating, we're sort of beating our head against the wall, aren't we?
Well, it can be, and then, you know, we always have the thing that there's turnover in tribal and state government as well. So sometimes you have a participant who maybe isn't excited about it, who maybe is replaced by someone who is. I mean, things are always changing. But yeah, that's, you know, that would be part of the reason why we wouldn't want to lock ourselves into a particular tribe, you know, because there can be a lot of stumbling blocks in this, because we've not had this interaction with tribal courts, you know, really outside of Turtle Mountain. We had that experience for a while, but we're not really there. We don't know when we get all the players in a room and talking how comfortable everybody's going to be. That's why we don't want to lock ourselves in. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Yes, Scott.
Mr. Chairman, to add to this, I think, you know, if this committee moves forward on this, I think what it does would strengthen the law, you know, the existing law. But also, I foresee the next step would fall on our Tribal State Court Affairs Committee, which Judge Foddy chairs, with our tribal court, our court judges. And so I think that would be a next follow-up, you know, to that, on whether or not our tribal judges, how they see this, how they would implement it with regard to sovereignty, to jurisdiction, to keeping the tribal child as a ward of the tribe. And I know we talked a lot about that as far as services, providing services, but still that child being a ward of the tribe, no matter what. And that would be the ultimate tribal goal, obviously, but to get them services, you know, state services. So there's a lot of detail to work on that, and that's, you know, again, been there, done that many times, and I think what this would do would obviously fall into that committee, and we meet, you know, regularly with that committee. So I think again, what this would do would help to strengthen a process, like Mr. Nygaard said, within our court systems, and go from there.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Going back to Senator Elkey's question about using one versus the, we have, you know, in our statutes, we have an interpretation that when you say a singular, like a federally recognized Indian tribe, that would allow the department to make multiple, because it would include, you know, the plural. Singular includes the plural. By saying one, then it truly is limited to a pilot project with one. If we said a, we could have, you know, you could, the department would have the discretion then to expand beyond one. So yeah. That would be the distinction between
kind of deal with one of my concerns is that if the resources are available and people are willing, I don't necessarily want to prohibit, shall we say, doing more than one. I would like to see at least one move ahead so we could get some experience with it, but I'm not opposed to there being more than the one if that was amenable to everyone. You know, so.
Mr. Chairman, then I could say at least one.
Yeah, we could. What would be the committee's feelings on that? Should we? Should we stick with one? Yes, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This might be a question for Vanette. Okay, if this passes and it's put forth by the legislature for one tribe, as it said. But we also have where the executive branch can enter into treaties. Could they enter into treaties that other tribes could join the pilot project without changing anything?
Mr. Chairman, or Senator, excuse me, Mr. Chairman and Representative Ammerman, yes, they could. You know, this would give a legislative directive to the department to take some action, but it would not preclude the executive branch from entering, you know, into something other than a pilot project. It could be a permanent ongoing without a expiration date type of MOU.
If I may, could the executive branch enter into agreements that other than the one tribe, if the resources are there, and they could enter an agreement that other tribes could join this pilot project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ammerman, yeah, you know, I suppose you look back to, you know, what the legislative intent was. That's why it's a little tricky by just saying one, because then it looks like the legislature only wants to do one, but that wouldn't stop the executive branch from, you know, going forward with multiple or, so, yeah, I know the intent was, you know, a pilot project typically isn't statewide. You know, you try to limit it to a particular, just to be able to gather data and to determine effectiveness before you go statewide, but it certainly wouldn't preclude that from happening.
Okay, thank you. Senator Elkey.
Mr. Chairman, do you have an idea which standing committee would be hearing this bill? Because we don't have a tribal and state standing committee in the legislature.
Judiciary, I would think.
Yeah, probably. Mr. Chairman, Senator Elkey, interim bills are usually, you know, distributed just to balance the workload those first couple weeks, so it's hard to say where that this would go. It probably would go wherever Department of Corrections usually would go, which I assume is, other than your budget bill, probably judiciary.
Well, yeah, I think Department of Corrections ends up in appropriations for their budget. They'd have to, I mean, it would end up coming down to some dollars and cents mm-hmm. somewhere along the way, I'm guessing, and we don't know what those numbers might be, do we?
No, we don't.
And I'm not trying to say that this bill is a bad idea. I think the idea is a good idea. I'm not so sure we want to, I'm not so sure that having a bill like this come before those kinds of obstacles would be better than Department of Corrections simply coming with their budget and saying, you know, we feel this is a good idea, and here's why, and here's what is necessary from a budgetary standpoint, and then, you know, have the hearing at that level. But this isn't doing it that way. I don't know.
Yes, Representative Johnson. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
something, yes.
Johnson, the study?
Yeah. The study resolution that we presented that day, Representative.
I think you're correct.
Chairman?
Yes.
I still think it's good for this to go before policy and then work it through into appropriations, because that's one of the conundrums we get into in appropriations is, well, where's the policy that says you're doing this? And so maybe run it through policy first and then find out what the fiscal note is on it. And then it'll have to go to appropriations, I mean, anyhow. But then the policy work has already been done on it. So we get into a little bit of a hiccup when there is no policy, but a new program wants to be established and we have no policy on it or no procedure on it. So it might be good to do it this way and then work. It'll have to go through appropriations anyhow because of the fiscal notes. So. And looking at some others, I know Mr. Nygaard Councilman Nygaard is concerned about, you know, the issue with budget constraints, but that's with every program there is out there right now. It doesn't matter what the program is, you know, we're everything has had budget constraints on it, and everything is coming in with a different fiscal note than we were hoped it was going to come in at, and I'm not sure, you know, how this will come in as a fiscal note or what the note on it is, but we'll have to have some kind of determination on that. I mean, it has to have something. And I know that the allocations through human services this last summer, spring and summer, were any kind of new or expanding program were the ones that were cut first. And so if you look at this as I would consider either an expanding program or a new program, it would fall under those constraints, you know, if it had been already initiated by the last legislative session, it would have been under those constraints already.
Well, are we ready for a vote?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, prior to the vote, and I could be wrong on this, if we wanted to change line 12 to A, would we have to rescind the motion and then add the amendment and then
you could just move to amend.
Yeah, I'll move to amend then. And then
we have a motion to change 1 on line 12 to A. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Senator Hickman seconds. Okay, so we have before us this amendment that and so makes it probably a little bit more clear that it's not necessarily limited to one. Any further discussion on that? Seeing none, we'll vote on the amendment. Please take the roll.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Hammerman?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Trottier?
Yes.
Senators Larson?
Yes.
Heckerman?
Yes.
Elke?
No.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, we have before us the amended bill. Is there any further discussion before vote? Seeing none, please take the roll on forwarding the bill.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Hammerman?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Trottier?
Yes.
Senators Larson?
Yes.
Heckerman?
Yes.
Elke?
No.
Mr. Chairman, motion carries.
Okay, we have a motion carried, and we will be forwarding this bill with our report to legislative management. And I thank you all for your consideration on this. And with that, I guess, what time are we at?
About 20 minutes ahead of schedule.
We're about 20 minutes ahead of schedule. Lucy, did you want to? Ready? And this presentation is on the state plan for the federal Every Student Succeeds Act.
At least I get some exercise.
Get over there. Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Lucy Fredericks. I'm the Director of Indian and Multicultural Education for the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction. And I'm here today just to provide a short update and information on the upcoming North Dakota ESSA Tribal Consultation Meeting, which includes several provisions that target educational needs of our Native American students in North Dakota. As you all know, the new federal law doesn't go into effect until March of next year. July of 2017, and so within the next year, the state is creating a state plan on the implementation of the new ESSA law. Each state department must create a comprehensive plan that outlines how they will implement the new law, and North Dakota is planning to submit their plan in March of 2017. The ESSA Planning Committee has met three times since May, and the next meeting is scheduled for this Friday, September 30th. And the plan is focused around continuous improvement with the three subcommittees that are the teacher and school effectiveness, standards assessment, accountability and reporting, and continuous improvement. And again, all the ESSA related information can be found on the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction's website, and I did include the website. And again, just a reminder about the new ESSA plan that it does require states to engage in meaningful consultation with tribes in the development of the state's plan to meet the needs of our Native American students. It also promotes self-determination in the education of our students by authorizing coordination and collaboration of tribal stakeholders with state education agencies and other tribal organizations. So attached, you will see the North Dakota ESSA Tribal Consultation Agenda, which is scheduled for Friday, October 21st from 1 to 4 in the Bryan Hill Hogland Room here at the State Capitol. We will begin with some welcome and introductions, and then we will provide an overview of the ESSA plan, and then also the provisions that are in the plan that would meet the needs of our Native American students. We will also cover our North Dakota DPI's vision for education, and then also we will talk about the meaningful tribal consultation discussion. And NIEA is in the process of developing a guidance for meaningful tribal consultation that will be a draft that will come out in October, and so that is one thing that we will be covering during this meeting also. And then we will break out into three of the subgroups, the teacher and leader effectiveness, the standards, assessment, accountability, and reporting, and the continuous improvement subgroups. And we will have some table discussions with those three areas. And then at the end, we will report out from each table. And then from there, we will decide how we can include what is reported out into the state plan. And then our next steps is to continue on and to maybe set either one or two more meetings after this initial meeting so that we can continue on with including what we have heard from the tribal stakeholders into the ESSA plan. And so that is the agenda for our first meeting. The next one is just a copy of the invite that was sent out. The agenda will go out this Friday to all the stakeholders that it was sent to. And so that is the information on the ESSA Planning Committee. Are there any questions on that section of the testimony?
Continue.
Okay. And then the last page is I'm happy to announce that we have launched our North Dakota Native American Essential Understandings Project, and it is posted to the website. And so if you click on the link, and then I've also included the link at the bottom, the teachingofourelders.org, and the website is in the process of being developed. So right now you'll see just some things that have been posted so far. We have over 80 elder interviews on the website. And then we will be posting exemplar lesson plans, K-12 lesson plans in all subject areas. We just completed 2 days of working on lesson plans last week, and those will be posted as soon as they are completed. And there are also additional other resources on the website. So if you get a chance to take a look at that, we're pretty excited about it. And we're continuing to work on that for the next year and a half to include additional resources on the website. Are there any questions on the Essential Understandings Project?
I guess not.
Okay, and I know Scott is also on the planning committee for the ESSA meeting coming up, so I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but we're moving along with that, so.
Scott?
Yeah, just to add, thank you, Lucy. Again, I think at our last meeting here, I just reiterated that, you know, it's really important that we have tribal leadership, educational leaders, superintendents, school board members. I met with the Turtle Mountain School Board on during the United Tribes Week here in town, and just really encouraged them as school board members to attend this as well on the 21st. So we get really valued input, and we can take that input and still have a good plan as we write the new plan, and also take those comments and move forward within our DPI and Indian Affairs Committee, Indian Education Committee as well too. So a lot of that work will be continued in that committee as well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Lucy, I guess my basic question, and I don't really want to put you so much on the spot, but you know, it's that whole meaning of what is meaningful consultation, and how is the department really determined to, you know, I mean, to you know, I assume it's not just this one meeting this one day, but I you know, could you really kind of tell us a little bit how your department understands that?
Right, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and that is one area that a lot of people have questioned. What does it mean by meaningful consultation? And so as I mentioned earlier, the National Indian Education Association is meeting next week, October 5th, and we are actually having a director's meeting, Indian Ed director's meeting, that they are going to provide us with a draft guidance. And so with that, we are going to be discussing that and also using that for this upcoming meeting. But meaningful consultation is exactly what you said. It's not just one meeting. There's follow-up. There's additional meetings. You know, it depends on, you know, what comes out of this first meeting. And it's basically taking what we have heard and making sure that it is included in our state plan. So again, you know, we need to hear from our tribal organizations, our tribal education departments, our tribal colleges, that, you know, deal with Indian education, and we need to either embed it or include it in our state plan. So, for example, one of the things that I would like to see in the state ESSA plan is the Essential Understandings Project. That is one thing that I think could be included under the standards. They're not actually standards, they're understandings, but they have connections to our North Dakota state standards. So I think that's something that we can include within our state ESSA plan to make our lesson plans more culturally relevant for our Native American students, not only on the reservations or in reservation schools, but also, you know, Native American students throughout the state. Because as we know, there are students that attend Bismarck Mandan. There's a high population of Native American students in the schools. And so that is one thing that I would like to see included, and I have discussed that also. So I think with meaningful consultation, again, we'll have more guidance on that after next week. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people have questioned. Well, what does it mean by meaningful consultation? And again, one thing that I see is that it is not just one meeting. It is continuous hearing feedback, getting what they want to see into the plan, and making sure that we include that. And so that's one thing that we are going to be talking about at this upcoming meeting also in October.
Okay. And then as the department really talked about funding, you know, I mean, the funding formula that was put forward, you know, would have deducted for land that many of these schools didn't have. And then we ended up where I think just basically every school with a real high population of Native youth all hit a cap and all basically didn't get the money that the formula looked like they were going to get. Has there been talk about changing that?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have not heard of any talk with the formula funding, but I know that is one thing that has been brought up before, and but I haven't heard of anything with the talk about the formula funding.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions for Lucy? Yes, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lucy, in March, when you submit this to the U.S. Department of Education, is that just a formality? Can they reject it? Can they change what you come up with? How does that play into it?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ammerman, yes, that is just the department's plan to submit it in March of 2017. Once it is submitted, it is not final. There can be changes made because, as we know, not all of the guidance has come out yet from the U.S. Department of Ed. And so after we do submit it, we can revise it. And so we have that, you know, chance to make sure that we do, if we make any changes to the plan, that we can do that. But keeping in mind that it will be implemented, you know, next year in the fall of 2017. And so we do need to make sure that if we do make any revisions, that it is done before then.
Any further questions? Yes, Mr. Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lucy, the teaching of our elders piece.
Yes.
I think it's a really great idea. Can you talk a little bit more about the support and the backside assistance that's available to a teacher, say, in someplace that is not even remotely close to a reservation to understand the lesson plans and the curriculum development to give more meaning to the delivery of that?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and Mr. Nygaard. Yes, this actual Essential Understandings Project is actually the phase two of our project. Phase one was the actual resource document itself that was created when we brought the elders together. And that was created and developed by the elders, and that is where we came up with the seven essential understandings. The phase two project that we're working on now is actually the lesson plans. It is the elder interviews and videos that will go along with the lesson plans. And then phase three, which I'm hoping to get funding for, would be the actual implementation of the lesson plans. And so that would include providing professional development, having facilitators go into the schools and work with the teachers and to help them coach them to implement the lesson plans. So all of them will be posted on the DPI website, and then we're also looking at videoing our facilitators, working with teachers, coaching them, helping them to implement the lesson plans, and we're hoping to post those on the website also. So we would like to see this throughout the schools in North Dakota, but of course we have to start somewhere, and then hopefully it'll get out into the schools. And so our plan is kind of the train the trainer thought, and so if we can train teachers, lead teachers from a certain school, and then have them go back to their schools and train the rest of their teachers on these implementation of these lesson plans, that's kind of our thought. And so we're hoping with phase three of the project that we will actually start working on the implementation and getting these lesson plans out into the schools and implementing them within their curriculum. And so that's kind of our plan. The end of phase two is actually, we are going to be doing a little bit of that at the end of this project here, is that our facilitators are working on going into some of the schools in North Dakota and actually implementing the lessons that we've already created, or the ones that we are going to be creating, which will be about 40 to 50 lesson plans that will be posted on the website. And so they will be going into some schools in North Dakota and actually starting that process. And so that's our thought. And that's how we would like to see this implemented. Because eventually we would like to see it implemented throughout all the schools in North Dakota. And Superintendent Basler is very supportive and is going to adopt these essential understandings through the state, through DPI. So.
Okay. Any further discussion? I don't see any. I thank you for your testimony. Right. And I guess at this point, we'll take a 15-minute break or so. We're running ahead of schedule. Let's try to be back in here 15, 20 minutes after. So thank you very much.
Members of the Tribal and State Relations Committee, I'm Maggie Anderson with the Department of Human Services, and I was asked to come and provide information on Medicaid funding for services that are provided to tribal members. So you do have my testimony, and there's an attachment to my testimony, and then in addition to that, you have a copy of what's called the State Health Officer letter, and I'm not going to walk through that letter, but in case you wanted it as a reference, it's also within my testimony right at the end. There's a link to that letter, and the department's testimony is published on our website, so that way if anyone loses the paper copy, there's an easy way to find the electronic version again. So a little bit of background, even before I get into the narrative of my testimony, the state of South Dakota has been working on looking at Medicaid expansion. And as part of that, they've been looking at how could they finance the state share of Medicaid expansion. So they've been having conversations with the federal government about an issue that really dates back to, more than a decade ago. It was just kind of resolving itself, so to speak, about the time I came into the department in 2003. And South Dakota and North Dakota had actually been in a dispute with the federal government over something similar to this, which was these services through Indian Health Services or Tribal 638 programs. And so South Dakota approached the federal government with a very similar question, and the federal government then came back in February of this year with a policy that has to do with care coordination and these services that are received through Indian Health Services or Tribal 638s. So today, if there is an individual who goes to Indian Health Services or Tribal 638 and they are Medicaid eligible, the federal government pays 100% of that. So it's not at our 50-50 typical federal medical assistance percentage. It's 100% federal. Now, if that person is referred out, so let's just say they go to Standing Rock Indian Health Services, and they're referred out to St. Alexis here in Bismarck. that service here in Bismarck is at the 50% federal medical assistance percentage. This policy that they've come out with has the potential to change that and allow some of those services to be at 100% federal instead of the 50-50. So again, going back to the South Dakota model, then South Dakota was saying, okay, the dollars that we free up from that arrangement, we will use to help, because you free up state general fund dollars that you would otherwise spend on those Medicaid costs, you free those dollars up, and that will help fund the state share of Medicaid expansion in South Dakota. So their emphasis is being put on how they finance Medicaid expansion, and everybody's incentive in that is to get Medicaid expansion on the table. So because that provides more Medicaid coverage for enrolled tribal members, it helps the hospitals who may have uncompensated care from individuals who would benefit from Medicaid expansion, whether they be enrolled tribal members or not tribal members, because that's not, I mean, Medicaid expansion would be for anyone who qualified. And so that's what's, of course, bringing everybody to the table. But when the federal government came out with the policy, it wasn't just for South Dakota. It's for all states who could benefit from that. So back in February, then just about a week after the allotment process went into place, this policy came out, and it lays forward the criteria that have to be used in order to access this additional money. So that's really what my testimony gets into, is that IHS tribal facilities can enter into these agreements with non-IHS tribal providers to furnish certain services for their patients who are American Indian, Alaskan Native, and the amount paid to the state will be at that 100%. So what that means is Indian Health Services, I'll just use Standing Rock. Standing Rock could enter into an agreement with St. Alexis. They can enter into an agreement with Sanford Healthcare. They can enter into agreements with individual practitioners who happen to live here or practice here in the Bismarck community. And when they refer that person through Standing Rock Indian Health Services and that care coordination agreement is in place, then those are the types of services that could be matched with this 100% money. There are very specific requirements about what has to be in that care coordination agreement. So at a minimum, the care coordination has to, number one there, the IHS tribal facility practitioner providing a request for specific services, and that can either be done by electronic or other means, and any relevant information about his or her patient. So they can't just have a blanket that's, we're referring this individual to Bismarck. It's, we're referring this person because we can't provide these cardiovascular services here, and we need them to see a specialist in Bismarck for these types of tests. So the referral has to come from the Indian Health Services or tribal facility, and it has to be going for a specific service. Number two, the non-IHS tribal provider has to send information about the care that they provide to that individual, including the results of any screening, diagnostic procedures, whatever it may be. So then once that individual sees the practitioner here in Bismarck, again, let's just say at St. Alexis, then the practitioner at St. Alexis has to send kind of a summary report back to Indian Health Services, because Indian Health Services provider still kind of owns the care for that individual. It's this care coordination through information sharing, which would also be very easy if it was all electronic health records and everybody had those things to send electronically. Then moving to the top of the second page, number three, the Indian Health Services or tribal facility practitioner has to continue to assume responsibility for the patient's care by assessing the information that comes back from the non-IHS practitioner, and they have to take appropriate action, including when necessary, furnishing or requesting additional services. So they may hear that these are the tests we ran. This, you know, I now, as the practitioner here in Bismarck, may need to actually refer it on somewhere else because they need additional services, or I think they may need additional follow-up. But that IHS tribal practitioner has to continue to be responsible for that original care. And then the IHS tribal facility incorporates the patient information into their medical record through a health information exchange or other agreed upon means. So that's kind of what the expectation is about what care coordination means. To ensure accountability that all of this is happening, the state agency, the Medicaid agency, will actually be the ones responsible for monitoring that and ensuring that it's more than a paper process, that there is care coordination going on and that the information is flowing back and forth and advanced referrals or other steps are being taken. So because the agency will be the one claiming the 100% funding and pushing that money out to whether it's, again, a St. Alexis or a Sanford or whoever it might be. The documentation that is required to be kept must be sufficient to establish that an item or service was furnished to an American Indian, Alaskan Native, and they were a patient of an IHS or tribal practitioner pursuant to the request for services from that practitioner. The requested service was within the scope of the written care coordination agreement. So let's say that the care coordination agreement was just about hospital-based services. And, you know, I don't think we'd limit it that, but for some reason, let's say we did, then you couldn't take that and start adding on other services that are not hospital-based. So you know, we'll want to think about that in the context of what's all included in the care coordination agreement. Number three, the rate of payment that's authorized is what's under this state plan and is consistent with the requirements. So the other thing is, let's say it's a physician service to a specialty practitioner. We'll go with a cardiologist. And that cardiologist submits a claim, and the Medicaid payment for that would normally be $150. The payment will be $150. What they're saying is you can't use this avenue to now all of a sudden pay that practitioner $400 just because you're able to access 100% funding for it. You have to pay the same that you would pay under anything else in the state plan. And then there's no duplicate billing by both the facility and the provider for the same service for the same beneficiary, which is standard in Medicaid. So what I've attached to my testimony is an agreement we just received from South Dakota last week. So you can see it's dated August at the bottom. They've had drafts of this, but what was shared with us last week when it was sent was this is the one that's been approved and that they're going to seek signatures on within South Dakota. It will be signed, and this is very specific to Indian Health Services. Tribal 638 programs will be different because each of those will need to work with each individual tribe in order to do that. But again, let's using Standing Rock as an example. Because Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Health Board is involved, Standing Rock also has the South Dakota side. That's kind of what we're looking at is, you know, how can we make this work with Standing Rock, with this existing, and then continue to work on the other tribes. But this is the agreement that South Dakota has received federal Indian Health Services approval. The state office, the Indian Health Services providers, and the what I'll just call it a provider coalition or the provider groups. Because if you turn to the last page, you will see that it needs to be signed by the director of the Great Plains IHS area office, and it has to be signed by the CEO or equivalent of the provider. So in the North Dakota situation of using Standing Rock as an example, it would be still be signed by the director of the IHS Great Plains office out of Aberdeen, and then it would be signed by the CEO of the actual providers if they were in Bismarck or Mandan or Dickinson, wherever they engaged with them. So that is a positive step that we now have a document that we can work from, because we know this has been agreed to, and see if it's agreeable with North Dakota providers that would be engaged with Standing Rock. And then the other outline of steps we have, or I'll just catch you up on what we've done with this so far. Shortly after this memo came out, we had our quarterly meeting with the Tribal Human Services and Health staff, and so we reviewed this memo with them and talked about how we would see it working, and each organization indicated that they would see us coming and meeting with the tribes where they were Tribal 638 programs and working out the specifics of that. So in North Dakota, we have more 638 programs than they do in South Dakota. They have more IHS in South Dakota, and so we'll need to have individual conversations, because you could end up with a different agreement with each tribe, depending on the sophistication of health records,
the coordination that needs to occur, the various services that may be offered at that 638 program. So that is the step that we'll be starting to work on those things once we get our budget submitted next Monday and free up some staff time from that. And then there was something else I wanted to tell you in terms of an update, and then it's not coming to me now. So I'll answer any questions, and then maybe the other thought will come back to me.
Okay, Maggie. I guess I was kind of, I can easily see what's in it for the state, so to speak, but I wasn't too clear just what the benefit is to the 638 programs or the IHS program.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so again, speaking in South Dakota, where they're coming from, it's to get Medicaid expansion, because that allows, if I need to speak louder than the drilling, just let me know. I can talk really loud if I have to.
You're doing pretty
well. But so in South Dakota, it's to get agreement on Medicaid expansion and to allow then those individuals to enroll in Medicaid expansion. So what that does is the more individuals that are eligible for Medicaid expansion who happen to be American Indians, that frees up IHS dollars. So then they can use those $638, they can use those dollars to further the health care locally within their facilities. So it gives their individuals coverage, it frees up the health care dollars, and for the providers, for the non-IHS travel providers, it deals with that uncompensated care piece. So in North Dakota, we already have Medicaid expansion, so it's certainly been talked about in the Health Care Reform Review Committee as a means to fund what will soon be the 5% state share of Medicaid expansion. There's also other groups who are talking about this money and the, you know, things they could do with it. But the other piece, the incentive, is there are states who are in their conversations with 638 programs who are sharing in the savings. And that could take on a variety of different things. I've talked to the individuals at CMS and indicated, you know, how are they working on that, or what does that look like, and what kind of approvals would we have to have? Because generally everything in Medicaid we have to have the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services sign off on. And they share that in some states what it means is they're authorizing additional encounters within their state plan. Well, that's something we've worked with Scott's office and with Dr. Don Warren at NDSU, and we've already made that modification to our state plan. We did that a few years back because previously individuals could go to Indian Health Services and receive an encounter in a day. But what we did with our state plan is to say they could go for a dental encounter, they could go in the morning because they were just there for a well child visit, and then in the afternoon that same child broke their arm, or they went, geez, Mom, I don't feel good, and Mom took them back. They're able to get individual encounters for each of those, so they're not limited to one a day. So that actually increased the Medicaid revenue into Indian Health Services, and again, that's 100% federal money. Some of the other things we've talked about, now I remember what I was going to say. We have ongoing conversations with South Dakota, Montana, and our state, and just this last week, Wyoming asked to get involved with our conversations as well, because we have very common interest in working through this, and you know, we're states in our region, similar states, we have the same regional office to try to advance this forward. And in those conversations, one of the things we've talked about is paying the 638 programs a care coordination fee. So right now within the Medicaid program, we have what's called a primary care case management program, and so that's a little different where they're just assigned a primary care provider, but we do have a coordination fee, and we're saying, okay, could we do that with a 638 program and pay them an encounter rate for that additional care coordination that will be required if we're going to follow this, and then that would also be at the encounter rate. So that is potentially one incentive, is it would provide additional revenue to the 638. There are some states who are actually in those negotiations saying, okay, we're estimating that, let's just say on a $100 service that Medicaid would pay, obviously the state will save $50 because we would have paid 50, the federal government 50 to make the 100. Is there some portion of that share that would go to the tribal 638 programs? Apparently within Indian Health Services, that cost sharing, so to speak, or costs
savings sharing can't happen, but within Tribal 638 programs, there are two states, I believe it's Colorado and maybe Oregon, who are working on that.
Okay. And then, you know, we keep kind of rolling around Medicaid expansion. Is there any chance that come January, the feds will continue to pay 100% of Medicaid expansion on tribal members?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have not heard anything about that being advanced.
You know, it always seems strange to me because if they qualify for health insurance, the feds pay that. You know, we don't contribute to that or anything. And then we got the Medicaid expansion in between. And then we kind of, it seems like depending on where the income of the individual is, that they're treated differently as far as cost share between the federal government and the state. And I have never quite understood why that is.
And Mr. Chairman, that's definitely some of the genesis of this policy, was that if they went to IHS, it was 100%. If they were referred through IHS, it wasn't. And yet it's just a matter of that IHS didn't necessarily have those specialty service. The qualifications of that individual didn't change just because they were referred through versus receiving at IHS. So I think, you know, the federal government took a step with this policy, but it involves a lot more involvement and care coordination than an individual just showing up at IHS. And then within our expansion in North Dakota, because of course we run it through managed care, it's a little bit different of a calculation or an approach, because it's not each individual service. We will have to figure it into the actuarial rates going forward, what percentage of those services might be at 100%, because it won't be that they'll be parsed out and we'll get 100. It's just that hopefully we'll be able to get 100 for a portion of the premium going forward for the individuals who are part of these care coordination agreements.
Okay. You know, I kind of ask this because I just kind of keep running budget numbers in my head. Do you, any idea how much money would be involved on the Medicaid end of things? I know it's difficult to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, South Dakota has prepared some estimates, and I'm going off of memory, but I want to say over 5 years, they had something in the neighborhood of $50 million. Their American Indian population, in terms of their percentage of Medicaid, is greater than ours. And that is, I think, kind of all-in number, that every service would potentially get 100%. And I don't know that that, you know, is whether that will happen or not. So, but we have some limitations, too, in how we collected information and data, because like the one of the on page 2 where it says the item was furnished to an American Indian Alaskan Native patient, we have to be able to confirm that, and that is not a required field to collect in an eligibility. That Affordable Care Act changed some of what we can require in the upfront questions versus the what are called the optional questions, and so that's been a challenge for us as well.
Okay.
It's really hard to estimate. All I can do is say what South Dakota has estimated, and theirs is probably a little high for us just because they have a higher penetration of Native Americans on Medicaid.
And this does get a little bit away from this. What are we kind of using for projection on the Medicaid expansion for the coming biennium, total dollars or state share, either one?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're actually just finalizing that, and we'll be as part of our budget submission next Monday, and we have Sanford Health Plan and our actuaries working that right now.
We've had
lots of meetings last week to try to finalize those things. And
okay.
And as we, because, you know, you may recall one of our things from the budget allotment was to move the Medicaid expansion fee schedule closer to align to the Medicaid fee schedule. So it's, you know, doing that, and is there a step process, or do we go on July 1 of 2017 to the Medicaid fee schedule, and we're running all those scenarios.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions?
Yes,
Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie, I'm listening so hard to this, and maybe I missed it, but do we in North Dakota have a timeline where we're going to be in the same position that South Dakota is right now?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Heckman, my understanding is South Dakota will move forward with this as a portion of Medicaid expansion. So I don't, you know, based on a conversations that I've had with them, I don't believe they're going forward to claim the money or to have it in place. It's part of their Medicaid expansion. So to my knowledge, there are no states who've brought any money in from this yet because of what's required under the care coordination and those processes. We don't have a specific timeline. What we're working on right now is, like I said, can we work with Standing Rock because of this agreement that already exists now with IHS and providers. And for example, Sanford, of course, is a large provider in South Dakota. So we think that, you know, they would probably be a likely for sure partner here in the Bismarck area. Wouldn't see any reason why CHI St. Alexis wouldn't be the same way. So that's our first step we're going to have is that kind of meeting, and then get it in place for Indian Health Services and the programs around them. Work out all the system issues while we're continuing then to go around and meet with each of the tribes to have the conversation.
What is your timeline on that? I mean, where?
I don't have a timeline right now.
Okay. Senator Larson?
Mr. Chairman and Maggie, I was at a Sanford meeting last week or so, and they were talking specifically about that South Dakota isn't in the Medicaid expansion and North Dakota is. And so the premiums that individuals are having in South Dakota is 27 to 36% increase. And seeing how North Dakota has the Medicaid expansion, the premium increase here is about 6 to 9%. And my question is, do you know how many individuals are on Medicaid expansion in North Dakota? And then how many of those have enrollment numbers if they're connected to a tribe?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson, we have around 20,000 individuals enrolled in Medicaid expansion. And as your second part of your question, how many of those are enrolled members of a tribe?
Yeah. The reason why I ask is because when I enroll an individual in the marketplace, they have to upload their enrollment card or give identification proof. So that is a question that determines if they qualify for the Medicaid expansion or if they can have open enrollment, if they can, you know, because they can enroll any time
right,
or stop any time. But they need that card to be uploaded into the marketplace.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson, there's a number that's in my head that I think is right in terms of American Indians that are enrolled in expansion, but I'd like to double check it, and I'll send it back to the committee. But I think it's consistent with our regular Medicaid enrollment. It's in that 20 to 22% of our Medicaid enrollment is American Indians.
And if I could continue, just for kind of a clarification, I think. If an enrolled member is 300% of poverty, do they qualify for Medicaid expansion, or is it at the state level 138% of poverty that they qualify?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson, it's the maximum for Medicaid expansion is the 138, and it's not based on enrolled status as a tribal member. It's just across the board based on income.
I'm kind of confused about where the 300% of poverty comes in. I know that was an issue when we were learning about this and getting on board with it. Is that when they're still available for a tax credit if they make over the 300% of poverty?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson, and I'll be the first to say we're not experts on the marketplace because that's not our responsibility within the department. My understanding is that between 138 and 400%, people can qualify for the advanced premium tax credits. And then there's a portion within there where the American Indian population would not have cost sharing. And so I think that's those different levels within that 138 to 400.
Any further questions? All right.
Thank you,
Maggie. Very informative. Good luck with that budget. And so I guess that finishes our formal thing, but we would ask if there's any testimony from any interested person back there. Okay. And then I guess we're basically finishing up. Is there anything anyone would care to share, any discussion we could have at this point? Nothing? Yeah, we need a signee die motion, I know.
We also need a motion to direct you and I to prepare the final report.
Oh, yeah, the direct to the final report motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I make a motion that you as chairman and our legislative council staff, Ms. Richter, go ahead and provide, go ahead and proceed with the final report to legislative management on our interim committee work.
Thank you. Is it second? Second from Senator Larson. Any discussion on that? Do we need a roll call or can we vote? Okay, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carried. Okay, and then we need a signee die motion. You're not going to do it that way, no?
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Okay, Senator Heckman moves signee die. And Senator Larson seconds. And do we need a roll call on that? I guess we can do a voice vote on that as well. And I want to thank you all. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carried. So I want to thank you very much for your work and your participation for all those involved this last interim. And we'll move ahead with the bill to legislative management along with our report. And hopefully we can continue to work on relationship between our state and our nations. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Thank you for your leadership and for Ms. Richter for her work on our committee here. It's been, I think we've had some good conversations, so.
Okay. Thank you all.